Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hello, and welcome to Write It Up, a podcast all about the ins, outs, and in-betweens of self-publishing. I am P.E. Craven, or you can call me Paige, and I am your host for this podcast. If you are watching this on YouTube, I am coming to you guys fresh. I am no makeup. I am drinking tea. I'm squeezing this intro recording and actually about to do a bonus episode. And you know what? I'm not going to be doing anything with this. So if you're on YouTube, you see me looking at my face. I'm just not in the mood for it. And like we know about self-publishing, it's a la carte. You do what you want. As I sip my tea. I am so excited about this interview that we got to do. It's about hacking the process as an indie author and like things that you can set yourself up with through automation or boundary setting or how to prioritize your work and work-life balance. Deanna Hill is an incredible author, but beyond that, she is just a great content creator to follow because she has this element of realness that is really, really just relatable, honestly. And it makes the side of indie publishing more realistic, I guess, more relatable, more, what's the word I'm looking for? It just makes it more attainable, I think. I think a lot of us can really get into our heads about what it's supposed to look like, and she does such a good job of bringing it back to earth and, giving us that human side that sometimes I think we can start to lack. So this was a great interview. I'm really excited for her because her newest release is part of the Hellhound series that she did. It's a really spicy, dark romance that is perfect for a spooky season. So we are just about to step in fully to spooky season. So if you are a fan of that, then go check it out. She has an omnibus that is on pre-release right now, I think. So that will be coming out really soon. And then her third and final installment of the Hellhound series is, I think, already out or just about to come out. I can't remember. But either way, she's fantastic. I'm really excited for you guys to hear this. Before we get into that, if you are listening to this on release day, on Wednesday, September 24th, let me double check that because I think that's the date that we're heading into. Yeah, September 24th. So if you're listening to that, on Wednesday, September 24th, I am going to be leading a circle on Thursday, September 25th with my editor and content creator and baddie. She runs the platform Brave Bitches, and they do quarterly circles that are, you know, could be for creative, it could be for mental health and wellness, like really focused on helping women just get in touch with their identity and how to use that productively. It's called Into the Shadows, and this circle is about using fiction to help connect with your shadows. So if you know anything about Carl Jung, he's a psychologist that is pretty popular in a lot of different ways, but he identified the shadow as our subconscious, and there's different levels to that. So you have inner child, inner teen, you know, whatever. But we have these shadow selves that's really our subconscious that's helping us make it through life. And sometimes when we're dealing with that, there are things that are in our shadows that we might not be aware of. So anyways, this circle is about how to use writing fiction, specifically like sci-fi or fantasy, as a way to analyze and work or process with your shadows. I'm really excited about it. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. You can apply for it through Eventbrite. There's a promo code. It's the promo is Circle, C-I-R-C-L-E, all caps, and you get 50% off. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'll put it in the show notes. Details will all be there. And then also, it has happened. If you're on YouTube, you see me holding up my book. It has been released. It's on Kindle. It's on Kindle, not Kindle Unlimited. It is on Kobo, Kobo Plus, iBooks. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it online. You can buy it through Ingram Spark. But yes, it has finally happened. I'm so excited. So anyways, that's all for me. We're going to jump into the interview with Deanna Hill. I will put all of her details in the show notes as well. And welcome to the show.
And today we are welcoming Deanna Hill, author of the Asherah series, Asherah series. Thank you for that. She is not only a self-published author, but she is also a social media queen, a homeschool mom, and just overall baddie. And I'm really excited to talk to her today about some of the ways that she has found to keep the process effective. So we're going to call them hacks. But, you know, it's just a lot of her experience and how she's found a way to make it all work for her. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm excited. Before we start, a little icebreaker. What is your favorite trope?
Enemies to lovers. No questions. Like, I know that one immediately.
Yeah, it's a classic. It's really hard to go wrong with enemies to lovers.
Honestly, I blame all the 90s TV shows I watched. That's where it come from.
Excellent. Okay, and then before we get into hacking the process, this whole show revolves around self-publishing and the power that you can get from self-publishing. So I'm curious, what drove you to going the self-published route rather than looking at traditional publishing?
So kind of a multi-reasoning there. I like control, number one. I really like control. I like to be able to say, like, if I'm going to release now or later, or if I want to use this cover, just in general, I like control. And secondly, I don't have patience. I have no chill. And respect for everyone who can be in those trenches of waiting and hoping. And I have no chill. And so I always like, let's say, it's control versus no chill. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've talked to several other indie authors who feel the same way. They want the ultimate say in what's going to happen in their book and when it's published.
One time when I read that, you know, when you have editors, they can tell you, or traditionally published, and I could still be wrong about this, I don't know everything, you know, but they could tell you to change your story. And I don't know. That's my story. That's, they argue with me in my head. I don't like the idea of being, you know, told to have to change something for market value.
Well, and two, you know, kind of deviating from the topic a little bit, I think what's really powerful about self-publishing is it's driving the market trends now.
Yes.
Anything that's popular in self-publishing is now being replicated or sought after by.
And that, it cracked me up in a way, because I know that when I first got on Instagram, I was a book reviewer. And so I led to Indie Books because they had the pretty ones. They had the sprayed edges. They had the different covers. And now in Walmart, they have those in Trad Publishing. And I'm like, oh, I know where you got that from. You said like, aw.
Okay. So I think the best way to get started is to give you an opportunity to kind of explain your process of getting into self-publishing, because you took a kind of, I don't want to say unique. I've seen other people do this effectively. But I think you were one of the first people I followed that got into self-publishing the way that you did. So can you take us all the way back to like the beginning of your social media and kind of how you got involved in like the bookish scene and then that leading you to being a self-published author?
Yeah. It's actually really funny because I guess I got on Bookstagram. Actually, I was on social media before that as a homeschool mom. And that's one of the reasons is that Wild Hill Reads is my name was because for our homeschool account, I had used a version of that and created an offshoot because I started reading again because we were doing a lot of reading with the kids. But I realized that like the books that I read for them and the books that I read for myself were not exactly copacetic. So I was like, we need to create a whole new account. And I created that one really because we were just coming out of 2020, I think. And that was when I had stayed at home, and which I've been staying at home, but we were really at home. Like, you know, and so I started reading again, and I had actually just received my first Kindle Fire, I think is what I got. And that's when I found that. And I live in Nowhere, Arkansas. And so meeting books are now trendy. Like they were not so much a few years ago. That was still just like our small little sect of people. And so finding people that read books that I read, especially, was not very common here. So I created it as an outlet because I was something for myself, I guess. I created it. And then slowly and surely, I started finding out like about art teams or street teams and that I could get a book sent to my Kindle. Like it was so exciting for me because I could get it before everyone else did. And so I guess I did that for a little bit, and I'm trying to think. Once the process like rolled, it becomes confusing. I made a lot of friends that way, and I had a few of them because I said something one day about the Heat of Seas, because I actually wrote this, well, a very bad version of it, back in like, I think I was pregnant with my youngest, so 2014, I think, and I wrote on Wattpad. And this little story.
Oh, yeah, that's far back.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was way back. And it was terrible. Like, I still have the version on my computer. And I'm like, thankfully, those four little readers that read it, like, you never realized that I was as terrible as what it was. But I said something about this. And they're like, you really should just, like, write it. And I was like, you know, I don't really have the time. I've got the kids and the husband and just all the stuff. I was like, I don't know if I could. And so they were like, well, just do it anyway. And it actually was going to be a, like, I'm trying to think of what the words are. I thought it would be like a cool thing to do, like a Patreon or something like that. And just kind of release it for like readers just for fun. Like,
yeah,
nothing serious, you know, just so something
like a serialized.
Yeah. Story. Yeah. But just because I wasn't planning on publishing or any of that. It was just going to be fun, something I could do to kind of monetize while trying to be a reviewer and an influencer or whatever you want to call it. And then I can't remember who it was. I think I let someone read it. It was an alpha, a couple of alphas. And they're like, if you don't publish this, we're going to be mad. They're like, this is actually good. And I was like, no, I like, just make sure it's not terrible, like, you know, completely messing up something. And so from there, I wrote it. I'm trying to think. I got with Midnight Tide. quickly after that. And then pretty much threw myself in the deep end and said, let's go and figure this fun stuff out. Because, yeah, that's kind of how my life works.
Awesome. Yeah, I feel like a lot of self-published, I think a lot of authors in general need that push from somebody that is kind of like, no, you have to do this.
I mean, and I can remember them saying that. And I was like, no, like, I'm fine. Like I said, it was really just going to be something for fun, for free, like on a Patreon, or heck, I'd even said something. And I think I still had a post on somewhere I found the other day where I was like, hey, I'm writing. I don't know what's going to become of it, but yay, you know? And, but it's been fun. And I enjoy it from, I guess, the mom aspect of it, that this is mine. Like, these are mine, you know, and I love my kids. I love what I do. But for the first time in a very long time, I had something that was just fine, you know, something that made me happy for no other reason than I got to put stories out of my head and on paper.
Yeah. It's like almost like reclaiming part of your identity.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yes. Because like I can remember back in high school, I talked about being a writer. And the first time I looked into it, now this is back when self-publishing was not as like, what am I looking for? Most did not know the self-pub route. Like those who have self-published now, indie authors have worked so hard to gain respect, like back in 2014 or something. That was not the way it was. Like you didn't self-publish. It just wasn't. And I don't want to say be respected, but it was harder back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, but back in high school, I remember saying something about it to my English teacher. And she goes, oh, you're a great storyteller, but you're going to need an editor. No.
Okay, but we all need an editor.
Oh, like... yeah. But my grammar and my Southern speech, like you need a very good editor, but you're a good storyteller though. And so that actually always stayed in the back of my mind like over the years, and I was like, I should try that one day. So
awesome. And then so we actually got to know each other online through book tours. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience doing book tours and some of the social media stuff you've done for other indie authors?
Oh, so that, and I love that. It's always such fun because it brought me and my bestie Sam together, who's also my PA. No, it's really fun how we fall and I just like switched like role. And, but me and her met, this is how it goes. Me and her met through a different street team and just kind of clicked and whatnot. And when she was talking about like, she wanted to do book tours. And I was like, oh, yeah, you should do that. Like, it's totally awesome, you know? And so together, well, actually, at first, she started it. And I was just kind of behind the scenes and helped her this or that or the other. And then finally, she was like, hey, do you really want to, like, help me and be my assistant on it? And I was like, sure, I'm not doing anything else besides the 500 jobs that I have. And so we started doing that, and that's actually when I probably learned to do the most graphics was during that time period with her. Because until then, like, I had played with Canva. I had done a little bit of, Lightroom, stuff like that, but I hadn't really needed it, per se. And so when we started having all these different books and all the different graphics, and you're trying to make sure they're good for this and they're good for that. And so I got the most experience there. Now, she did most of that. I helped with the convo for the ones who were in the group with us that were the reviewers. That was part of me. But she doesn't do reels. She'll tell you that. I apparently have a good eye. I like to make reels. I always think of them like little movie trailers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I always liked movie trailers growing up, like as a kid, with the music and the sounds and the da-da-da-da-da. And so I always think of them as like little mini trailers and it cracks me up.
So just from that overview, I think if anybody can recognize that you wear a lot of hats, there's a lot going on.
Sometimes.
Yeah. What are some ways that you find a way to balance it out, you know, between being a mom, homeschooling, writing, having a social media presence? What are some ways that you find to be able to balance it?
So this is actually something that I found through, I guess it was a homeschool thing, and they talk a lot about rhythms of life, like going with the flow, but creating a rhythm, which is not to say that it is a routine, like at 8 o'clock, I do that, 9 o'clock, we have a rhythm. So we always started with, and most who have known me for a while will remember me making these posts, between the time I wake up in the morning and then about noon is when we did school. That was whatever we were doing that day. And then from about that point till about 2 is when I do a cleaning schedule. I actually have a cleaning schedule. On Mondays, we do mops. On Tuesday, we dust. On, you know, and like I actually have a daily cleaning. So it doesn't get as overwhelming, I guess.
Right.
You know, some days I still deep clean and find a baseboard and all that. But for the most part, daily tasks, I have those. And let's see. Now, when Brian comes home, he's actually very lucky. He's one of these that he actually gets up at 3:30, which is rare for most jobs. You know, he actually works from 7:30 to 3:30. And so when he would come home, that's actually when I would take, I guess, like my break. That's I sit down with him. We go outside, play with the kids, whatever. Well, then we have to cook. We feed, eat, and then after that, mom's done. When that kitchen light goes off, like at the end of the day, I'm done. That is when the other side of me kind of shows up for writing or editing or content creation. And I'm a night owl. So I do a lot of that, like at night until I do cut myself off at midnight. I refuse to do any work after midnight. Because if I do it after that, like, I will stay up way too long. But I've just kind of found, like I say, just rhythms in general. And I wish there was, like, an answer that I could give that, oh, this exactly works. And it's like, no, you just have to find the rhythm for yourself. And your, and that's what I say. I call them rhythms, not schedules. Because schedules give you, oh, if you miss... If you don't sit down and do your work at 2, like you said you did, well, what are you going to do? Do you try to catch up? Do you not catch up? You know, and so that would kind of vary. But throughout the day, I knew that school, lunch, clean, you know, whatever time period that may be, rest, you know. And so that's, I have schedules for everything or rhythms for everything besides the cleaning.
I love that. And a rhythm implies that it could be flexible also, you know. So as life changes, as your needs or priorities change, I also think it's really good to emphasize that that is what is working for your family.
Yes.
You know, if you are not a night owl, starting to work at 8 o'clock at night is probably not going to work for you.
Yeah, no. And actually, we switch a little bit in the summertime, like because we don't have school.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and so actually most of my nighttime stuff then becomes the school time, like that little chunk of my morning. It's harder for me to do that though, because once again, I'm a night owl. So writing at like 8 o'clock in the morning just seems so odd to me. I'm like, I can't be. I don't know. There's something about it at night that doesn't feel as bad. But yeah, at 8 a.m. and I'm like trying to write a smut scene or something. It's like, No, can't do it. I still have coffee. I need like something, I don't know, water or something.
Yeah.
But no,
it's gotta get warmed up a little bit. You gotta get warmed up a little bit.
That's like, I'm gonna be having all that at 8 a.m.
Yeah. Okay, so in this process, was there a moment where you were like, okay, no, I need to actually figure out how to make this all work? Was there a moment where you're like, I need to figure out either some shortcuts, some procedures, or even some equipment? Like, I don't know if you like organize things a certain way in order to get it all.
Yeah. I think it was last year where Brian actually came to me and he's like, we're going to have to figure out something. He's like, you're getting burned out. And I do also, I'm very close with, anybody knows, I'm very close with the Nana, which is my grandmother. And I see they're very, they don't live far from me. And I'm very with them often. And they have a lot of health issues from time to time. And so I'm also doing that along with everything else. And during this time last year, he came to me and he's like, we've got to figure out something. Because he can tell that I'm starting to get more stressed. I'm not sleeping. I'm doing the things, but I'm not, like he says, there for the things. Like, I'm just kind of monotonously going through it. And I told him that I was just feeling overwhelmed, just completely, like, between trying to do content, making graphics, taking care of all sides of my family, and then writing. And I wrote T-Hoss and T-Tot very, very quickly, right there together. And ended up kind of burning myself out, that it took me a little bit to even want to write anything because I was just tired. Like, I literally was telling him I wanted to just stop. Like, I was done. I wanted to delete social media. I wanted to just disappear, you know? And that was when I had to figure out for myself what was triggering me so hard. Like, was it the writing, or was it something that could be differently in the house? Or was it that our routines and rhythms need to be reevaluated? And a lot of it for me was social media, because it's very hard to stay, I guess, on all the time. In a way, because back then I did not have any hours. If you sent me a message, I would respond within 3 seconds. Like, I was on all the time. And so one of the things I actually did for myself was make it like I have hours now, as far as I don't live on the social media anymore. Yeah. And then I learned, I think Notion. Try to remember. It's like this really cool little, you can create dashboards, like organizational things. And that is my complete brain.
Is that an app?
It is. It's a website one. I know that. But you can also get it as an app too. And you can make it like really pretty or very basic. Hang on, my grandma. Thing and make sure. I know it's Notion. I'm second guessing myself. Yeah, Notion. And so you can actually buy like little, because I love a template. You can buy a little template on Etsy, and it has like my recipes, my meal planner, stuff for the book, like where I can brain dump everything. Vacations. It is one of my absolute best things I've ever found for organizing. Some people find it overwhelming, and it takes a little bit to get used to, but it is my, like, it's my one-stop shop. It's my,
you know, I love everything.
And say, but that, finding that helped a lot, because I could just kind of, I guess, see what I need to do without feeling like just complete overwhelmed with it.
Yeah, I love that. So I think one of the big takeaways I'm getting from that is, you know, first off, listening to your body.
Yeah, that would be,
you know, we work so much with our minds as writers, but like a lot of that energy is coming from our bodies.
Yes. And that was always one thing. Because like I said, I don't sleep. I've never really slept a lot. You know, I've always needed like 4 to 5, 6 hours, and maybe he started noticing, talking about like your body, I wanted to sleep in. Like, I would sleep in as much as I could. I would be the first one in bed before he was. Like, I mean, I was ready to sleep all the time, like a teenager I used to be. And that was, yeah. So even now, for myself, I start noticing if I am feeling that way still. Like, if I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be sleepy, and I just am taking naps, which I don't do. It's like, something's wrong. You need to look, where we, you know, what do we need to redo or pause or take off the plate, something.
And then some of it is boundary setting. It's a hard transition. Once you start publishing, you become a public figure. In my experience, I had a hard time transitioning into that at first. Just feeling kind of the same, like I had to be available.
Yes.
All the time. And then I think I also had a conversation with my husband, and he was like, he was kind of like, you know, do you think Stephen King ever did that when he, you know, what were people doing? Mailing him letters all the time. And
I know. And that's something that I think back on too, when I'm like, you know, there's no way they could, like, and even now a lot of people, they still have like boundaries. It seems to, I mean, I know that trad also is engaged with their audience and stuff as well, but especially indie authors, because if we're not showing it, who's going to? You know, like, it's like, oh, yes, my book. And so for us, it's like almost harder to turn off, just because you worry every message. If you don't answer them right away, what if they lose interest? Or what if you didn't answer that question quick enough? Or something. And so boundaries was very hard to figure out. And I'm still figuring those out, because I'm also a people pleaser.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and because, too, we want to be liked. You know, we want people to like us, and we want people to like our books.
Yes. It's like, please.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so what do you do in order to prioritize all of the things you need to do? Is there a system that you go through in order to set your priorities?
Kind of. I'm a little bit okay. Like, for my priorities, it's always, well, it depends on if I have a release coming up. Because obviously, if I have a release coming up, that's going to take center stage. Now, occasionally, I have little gremlins in my mind that make me want to go do something else entirely. But I've also, and this is going to sound almost counterproductive, I've learned to chase those, or not chase them, but if I feel called to do something, I need to do it. Otherwise, my brain's going to put a stop on whatever. But I do laugh during my edits, because sometimes, like, and you know this, you'll have like simple edits, like, oh, you should add a comma, you should do this. And then you'll have like the bigger ones, like, oh, you need to redo this sentence, you need to do. I always joke that I either have my writing brain on or don't want to do anything, because I'll go through and make the little simple ones first. And then I have to put myself a reminder to go back when I feel a little bit more refreshed. But prioritizing, as I've had to figure out what for me is the most important, I think. For example, yes, social media is important. But if social media becomes the whole point and I'm not writing, then I'm not helping myself. Like, for me personally, that's, yes, I might still be getting new readers, but if I'm not writing because I'm so exhausted or just burnt out from trying to be on social media, then I'm actually hurting myself. So I always try, that is really on my lower end of stuff, but that also means I batch content. So I make graphics a lot at one time, or I'll film reels when I feel like it, which is always hit or miss. I'll film those, but I'll film like 20 a day. or 20 in one day, and then I won't touch it for, you know, a while. But I think that has always been the most, just figuring out what is actually a priority to help, like, benefit myself and not just something I feel like I need to do because I'm told I need to do it. Like, does that make, I don't know if that makes
sense. No, yeah. I love that. I think you were saying chasing. I like that idea too, of like chasing the inspiration.
Yes. I'm saying I definitely am one of those. I mean, I can sit in front of my computer and not have the inspiration and force words, and then you can absolutely tell it in my writing. Like, it's terrible. It's awful. That's when I get into my, and then they go, and then we sit, and then we, you know, I'm just trying to get it out. Or if I actually go to what is calling me, it could be a scene from a different, I mean, it could be a scene, could be a completely different project. I realize that the writing comes a little faster. I tell people that I can see it in my head then, and it just makes it all so much smoother at times. Now, sometimes I have to get onto myself and be like, we need to go back over here, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Go back over there. But for the most part, I think, at least for myself, like kind of giving into that flow of inspiration helps the brain also, because it doesn't feel as much work. It's more like it always should have been my passion, not, you know, something I have to do.
Yeah. Okay. So one area that I think a lot of people could probably use help with is that batching content. What are some ways that you found like really effective to get a bunch of graphics done, or to get all of that content scheduled ahead of time?
Yeah. So when it comes to reels, so like I say, I will do a lot of, I'll do this one first because it's the easiest. I'm not always the best at following trending sounds, just so we're clear. Like, I know that's a huge thing, and I do try, but sometimes, you know. But while I, like say, I would film 10 to 20 videos, and these are short. I don't usually do very long ones. I would do that in one day. Well, that means that for the next 2 to 3 weeks, I'm saving sounds. I'm going through and I'm getting little ideas. Like, I'm getting them ready for when I feel like creating them again. So it's kind of like doing the research, I guess, while I'm off. But now when it comes to graphics, my favorite thing to do with graphics, honestly, is to create one and then just kind of change out the background and like have a set, a few set taglines or... if you're doing like, trying to think what I do, quotes or something. And I just kind of recycle those, I guess, like, because even if, and it took me a long time and I'm still getting better at this, is the recycling of things, because you always want new content. And I get that. But just because a few of your followers might have seen it, you've probably gained some since then. It doesn't always show up in people's feeds. And so, honestly, reusing content is amazing. And I think, like I say, that's my favorite. Like I say, I love a good template. So I'll just have a template and then just make like several and then switch up backgrounds. Music is always a big thing for me. I'm always, always switch up the music. That makes it just so much. And then I think that's all I got. It's work, but it's not as bad if you just do it in one day, because you get to see, I guess, over time that it's so much easier, especially with being able to schedule stuff now. Like, I remember being able to schedule stuff, you know, and that was so much harder, because then you had to remember to wake up, get it done. And actually, I'm going to be batching content today because I'm going on vacation next week. So, yeah, I know.
So excited.
So I've actually got to do that later today as well. Because, once again, I'll be gone, but it's still scheduled. It's still not something you have to worry about. Like, I forgot that I've scheduled stuff before, and then it'll pop up on my feed. I'm like, today. Okay. Like, yay, I'm glad I'm making content.
Yeah, one of the lessons I learned This is actually something I learned as a dance choreographer. But I had a professor who used to say, your motto should be KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. You know, like
but it's true.
Yeah. A trope map with different backgrounds. You can do like 10 of those and schedule one a week.
Oh, and like, I was going to say, and you can also take things like I've been recently doing this one. Like I might have like a series of something that I'm posting. So slides, right? Like several slides. Well, if you get a couple of those, you can kind of mix and match. And then you have a whole new set of slides. And so that's been one thing I've been learning. It's kind of just taking little bits and pieces. Or at the end of, like if you post two slides, well, at the end, post all of them at once. You know, like just kind of, like I said, keeping it, well, like you said, keeping it simple. I mean, it's just pulling what you already have and changing the background. A font. I always like to change my fonts because I can never stick on one. I'm terrible.
Yeah. And honestly, like if you haven't figured out Canva yet, then
Canva's, I have to admit, that's been one of the best things because like I remember, like I said, I mean, I'm old. So, I mean, we were doing stuff on Paint and like crazy stuff, you know, and Canva has made it so simple now that I don't think I can go without my Canva anymore. I really don't. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's on my phone. It's on my computer. It's, I mean, it's everywhere. I'm like, I was doing, making Canva invitations for my mother the other day. Like, I'm like, I love this thing.
Yeah. I made a book cover for a little novella series I'm kind of plucking away at. Yeah.
I'm brave enough to make a book cover.
We'll see. I'm not 100% sold on it yet. I need to get character art. I'm going to hire that out because I'm not.
Me and my stick figures don't have that. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I have like these little placeholders of like cartoon characters that are in the Canva graphic. That looks, you know, but it's like, you know, they're just waiting in place until I get the actual character art.
Let's just ignore that. It's fine.
Yeah. But okay. So let's talk about how you prepare for a launch, because that is one thing when I look at your Instagram, I feel like you've got, you know, you say it's chaos, but I can go back and look and I see like you have kind of a formula. You've got a way to get people excited and following.
I try. I always, first thing is I'm a believer that having pre-orders open as long as you can is helpful. Like, and that doesn't mean that you're going to get a ton of them. It's just more helpful in the long run. And I also always make my pre-orders like $1 or so cheaper. Just because I'm a coupon girl too. I like a good deal. So, I mean, there's that. Like, I will absolutely order something if you tell me I can get it at a cheaper price. I'm like, okay, thank you. But for launch, I have, I'm trying to think. In the middle of releasing my Hellbound Heart series, this has been one of the most chaotic times because I decided to release those. What is it? See, May, July, and October. So I'm doing like back to back to backs. And this is the first time I've ever done that. But I try to, I'm bad about being vague. This is why I think, like, people, like get interested in a way. I'm pretty much like a 90s movie trailer. Like, because they never really told you. You know, if you watch movie trailers now, they show you all the best parts.
Mm-hmm.
I will throw a quote at you. I'm not going to tell you who said it. You don't know what's going on. And I'm like, here, this is what you get. And then between that and making some of the most chaotic stuff in my head for taglines, I'm still working on trying to figure out how to do those, but I'm getting better. But for launch, like I say, I do pre-orders as I open them as quickly as I can and feel comfortable with it. And that's usually for me. That is when I finish usually the first draft. Like, and I have my date. I will usually do it because then I feel like comfortable enough that I'm going to be done by then. I don't do it before I write something with the exception of the last little Hellbound Carts. Like that one, that was a whirlwind. It was not supposed to come out until next year, and I had to relook at everything and just throw them at people now for the next few months. And but between that and I like to do, I don't really do title reveals per se, but I do cover reveals because I'm a cover fanatic. I'll buy a book because of my cover. I have no bones about it. I'm like, I don't even know if the book's about mine, you know. But I do the cover reveals, and I really, really find that, like I say, people really like quotes. They quotes and tropes, which funny, right? Come on, tropes. That seems to be what gets the most interest, because if you have a good quote, oh, and art, character art, that would be my third. It just didn't rhyme. But those three things, if you seem to get the most interest, I think, because you want to hear what the characters, you know, what is a big thing that's going to make your little toes curl, or you'd go, you know, like I think that is my favorite part. Is getting to show some of my quotes, like, even if they're not, like I said, the toe curling, but they're just like a scene setting or something, like that is my favorite. I was trying to think of what else I do for releases, because I don't think of as doing something, I guess. I'm just kind of winging it at times, most of the time, all the time. But like I say, pre-orders and then quotes, and I do like to do reels for them on occasion, but I think that's pretty much all I do. I don't know if I do anything special, like outside of what anything else. Like I say, pre-orders though, I do get those bad boys out early.
Do you think having an elite team or a solid art team helps with the launch?
I do. I am a solid street team, especially art greeters, which I do not have a set art team. Now my street team gets my arcs, but I don't have a arc team for those. I just take signups,
mm-hmm.
And then hope someone likes it enough to review. But my street team, they really, like, when you find, and it takes a little while to figure out, I think this was part of it for me too. It takes a little while to figure out, like, what works, you know, for you, for them. What are you looking for in a street team? You know, are you open to people who haven't actually read your books and want to try them? You know, things of that nature. But at the same time, some of those people work so hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, they are sharing stuff like every single day for me, even if it's just repost, and even if it's just 10 more eyes, that's 10 more eyes than I would have never had, you know? And so I'm always really, really grateful for my street team. Cause like I say, they've been with me. Some of them have been with me since the very beginning, very, very, very beginning. And some of them are new and, had just closed street teams, like a couple weeks ago, and got a whole new member. We're all set up on a whole different platform now, and it has been really, really fun. Like, they've been working their tails off because I just seem to have stuff flying at them every week. I'm like, I'm so sorry and I apologize. I'm not always this busy, but I do. I think the street team, like I said, I've never had an arc team specifically,
mm-hmm.
but I've considered opening up one, just to see if people are interested, because I know a street team is a commitment,
right?
Or, you know, like, and that's a commitment, and I can understand this, that not everybody has, you know, but an art team, I would definitely say that would be a beneficial thing.
So one of the things I did recently this year, and I would say this is probably a hack, I divided my street team into tiers. So like tier one mm-hmm. is like a traditional street team. So they'll get a hard copy.
That's the book.
And so, you know, there's not as many people on that one. But they are asked to make some original content.
Mm-hmm.
kind of as an exchange of, you know, a hard copy. So it could be an unboxing. It could just be some sort of graphic, whatever, you know, they have time to do. And then my tier two is more like an art painting. So they will get a digital copy.
Oh,
and I like that. Review, and then I will put things in the chat like, hey, if anybody wants to share, I made this reel, or, you know, like if you want to share this to your story, or and some of them will do it and some of them don't. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Yeah. And that's what I always laugh. I almost said the same thing every time. I'm like, if anybody's able today, like if you could, please go throw this at somebody, like say something, you know. Yeah, having a street team, they're really funny. And I like being able to chat with them. Some of that's, it cracks me up because you get me completely like chasing a child and like texting. So you're going to see everything and hear me just be crazy most of the time. And I love having a team. They're really fun. Like that's my favorite.
Yeah. I would definitely say for anybody new, start thinking about street teams, because that, once I started doing that, I feel like maybe felt more real. Is it like you have contact to people who are actually reading your work?
I know. And that's always the weird part too, because you know they've read it and they're like, I remember one of the first few times someone had actually sent me a message and was like, oh my gosh, I read this and I really, really, I'm still very awkward with that because I'm like, thanks.
Really?
Yeah, I'm like, my book, like especially with someone local too that always messes with me, and I'm like, thanks. Like,
oh yeah,
I would say, but it's so exciting to have people who are generally almost just as excited or more sometimes even than I am, because you know, by the time we release something, we've done Write the Thing 15 times,
right?
Like, you know, it's no longer exciting, I'm done with it, and so it's really fun to see how exciting they can get as well. And that's my favorite, is to have a good street team, like, and not feel bad if like you have to kind of figure out what that looks like for you. And that can look like, because I know some street teams, you know, they can give or not give, but they have other perks, right? Like some street teams have tons of perks, some have the bare basics, and that's okay too. I think that's another part of boundaries and being overwhelmed. Don't do anything that's going to overwhelm you, because it should be a fun place for you, for them. It should be more of a peaceful than chaos, you know, and stress, more stress.
So I think that really brings me back to another thing I would love for you to talk about, because we kind of talked about it at the beginning of the episode. And I have a feeling some people don't know what this is, but book tours. Let's give me your thoughts on book tours as somebody who used to organize them, participate in them, and now as an author. And what are some ways we can do them effectively? Because some book tours are not, well, not all book tours are equal.
Correct.
Some are better than others.
And I think some of that is also a change kind of in the reader sphere as well right now. I think some of that is the change in reader sphere, because it really has changed a lot even since like 2021, which is when I was on there, because back then it was almost just like the wild wild west, I mean, of stuff, you know. It was just readers were here, authors were here, and it didn't matter. And now there have been more boundaries placed with, you know, reader space, author spaces, and that's totally fine. It's just changed the dynamics of everything. Book tours can be a phenomenal way to absolutely find new, like, readers. Because I was a reviewer before. I found a bunch of my absolute favorite books because I was part of a review company or, you know, on someone's PR list or something. And I see a pretty cover and I'm like, yay, let's try it. I think now, like I said, it's getting a little bit harder just because of things have changed. I don't think anymore you can like have them, what's it looking at? You can no longer require like they be done by a certain time. And that was something that back then was a completely normal thing, you know, because I can't tell you how many times I have stayed up till like 2 o'clock in the morning because I knew my review was due the next day. You know, it's like, right. I mean, I was up.
Yeah. So let's go over that really quick, because the Federal Trade Commission, mm-hmm. their guidelines is, number one, when you do ARCs or betas or street teams, you cannot require them to give you a positive review. Mm-hmm. You cannot ask them to refrain from sharing their thoughts. It should be indicated if anything was done. And so, like, if I give somebody a free copy, mm-hmm. I could be mentioning, I got this free copy and these are my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to help protect consumers.
Yes.
And so a practice that might have happened in, you know, 2020, mm-hmm. where a reviewer or an author asks a reviewer who, you know, you have a negative review.
Yeah. You would hold them for 2 weeks or, yeah.
Right. You can't do that anymore.
No.
It's unethical. And if you are doing that, then you should absolutely start changing that behavior.
But that, I mean, and it was a common thing, you know, just a few years ago when we were doing mm-hmm. them. Like, that was every street team or every, you know, author had that. And I get it. Like, and I get why we did that, or why it was done in general. But now, like I say, it has to be harder for tours. I mean, just in general, and it's almost harder for authors because, unfortunately, like, you don't want to give out just a ton of books, like, mm-hmm. just for free, for nothing. I mean, yes, no, you're not requiring anything of them. And no, they're not getting paid for reading. But you as an author, I mean, obviously you want readers that are going to leave a review. I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, it's just part of it. I don't want to give away something that I worked hours on for free, you know. But tour companies, I actually don't use one anymore since the one that me and Sam, like I said, we stopped when I actually became an author for the most part. I got so busy and then she started being a PA for authors and for me. Like I said, I went from assistant to like her not being my assistant. And anyway, and so we actually stopped back before all of this other stuff mm-hmm. had come up. And because I guess now we've done that, I never utilized like a tour company myself anymore, because I just know how to kind of
right.
do film, you know, nowadays. And so we do that. But tour companies, like I say, I know it's got to be harder for them now just mm-hmm. to try to get reviews. But I do still think they're a very good resource of mm-hmm. just getting new readers and followers or friends. Heck, like I said, I've met almost everybody I know through like a tour company or a street team. I'm like,
yeah. And to backtrack, because we didn't really define what a book tour company is. It's kind of like a community organized by a business. Mm-hmm. Usually it's an individual or a small group of people who help distribute advanced reader copies or special copies for free to readers
uh-huh.
with the intent that they would make a review. And most of the time they're doing graphics that the book tour company would provide.
Uh-huh.
So then you're getting more exposure on social media. It's primarily focused on social media.
It's kind of like a person run NetGalley in a way or something, yes. You know, because almost everybody knows NetGalley or some of the other ones where you can get, you know, e-art copies.
Like
BookFunnel and a couple of those. And it's basically just human rants. And a lot of indie authors use it because NetGalley and stuff, like, very expensive.
Right. Yeah. And then, but you know, there are some book tour companies that are on the more expensive side. And then there are some who are very affordable. And so some of that comes down to what you are able to afford.
Yes.
And then on the flip side, if you don't have the physical bandwidth or mental bandwidth to monitor your art, or for a street team. A book tour is a really great way to kind of circumvent that. So rather than managing the street team, you can hire a book tour company.
Yeah.
I think I hired Sam. The first time I hired her, it was like maybe $100.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it is money.
Yeah.
But it wasn't outside of my budget.
Right.
And it got my book into, I don't know, like 50 more people than it would have had I not gone that route.
And that's what I was fixing to say too. Another good thing about book tours and or anything is that ARCs usually come with both negative and positive reviews. Usually, if you have kind of a book tour company, you should send out your readers' reviews anyway, but they you won't know who DNF'd most of the time. You know, you don't have to worry about like, oh, did I send this ARC to this person and they hated it, because they take care of that. So it's kind of creating a almost like a buffer between that to make it not, like you said, not so like mentally taxing or anything like that. And like say, and you don't have to worry about like finding people.
Yeah.
Because that's the harder part too.
What I really enjoyed working with Sam, and I know she doesn't do this anymore, but in my experience, one of the things that she did, and actually it might have been you helping her do this, but was find readers that liked the genre that I wrote. My book wasn't going to somebody who loved horror. Mm-hmm. I didn't write horror.
Okay.
I had a weight. And kind of the chicken. And just a baby. Can't do scary movies and stuff. And so, you know, somebody who prefers something like that, or somebody who prefers contemporary romance is my romantic fantasy, because world building and lore and magic are going to get bored. And so it's kind of streamlining it.
Yeah. I mean, and it does. And it's not even, I was thinking that when we did that, it was always funny if we get like a really like if we got a horror book, because that wasn't a common thing.
Right.
But we also knew like who we could send that to. You know, like who is it that's either so open or they like it? Like we could do that. And most horror companies do. They're going to try to find people that, I mean, I am not really a contemporary romance reader in general. I don't care to read books, you know, like, and there's nothing against that. I'm more of a dark fantasy or dark romance. Like, I don't do Hallmarky stuff. So there would be no point in sending myself one of those. Like, I wouldn't send myself a contemporary romance if I was on a tour company. You know what I mean? Like, she don't need that. That's not her jam. Because you want, like I say, you're trying to find readers. I mean, it's a relationship, a friendship between the tour company, the author, the readers. And there's a lot of trust involved also, which is also another reason you should always check out who you're hiring. Just a fun fact of that one real quick.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say book tours are definitely a hack for a new, if this is your debut that you are heading into, you know, if you can do a street team, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do ARCs, that's great. If you feel overwhelmed by either of those, go with a book tour.
Go with a book tour. Absolutely would recommend that for someone new, because you don't have the readership either yet.
Right.
And so it's so much harder, especially with algorithms the way they are, and because like you said earlier, not to backtrack, but there are book tour companies that are across the board for what you have to provide or how expensive they are. Like it's really easy to find one that's kind of tailored more towards what you could do. Like, you know, there's some that give full PR boxes and that's requirement. And they do the whole thing. And so it's more expensive. I don't know. I don't do this often ever. And so I would be, especially when I first started, I was over here in this little bitty, you can have the digital copy because that's all I have, you know, and that's fine. And so, yeah, it's all about finding what works for you, but definitely for trying to find new people, you know, especially out the gate.
Yeah. So for somebody who is just starting, and I would say this is like kind of on the back end, like they've done their editing, they've gotten their cover design, they are gearing up towards the launch. But they're starting to realize everything else that goes into it.
Yeah.
Formatting and, you know, like using the publication companies that we have access to. And they're just starting to feel like they just can't do it all. What are some tips, suggestions, resources that you would love a new self-published author to know about?
So in one of those, I think, and this is always one of those that seems like a luxury, I guess, but it's one that if I could go back and tell anyone, it's like find a personal assistant. And they range across the board for what they can do, what they, you know, what they can manage, their prices. Like you can find, I know Sam, she loves admin work. That's her favorite thing. She hates making reels. Like that's not her thing. She tells you that it's completely fine. She does not do content creation, you know? And so she does a lot of admin work, which is awesome, especially for a new person. Finding someone who can handle, you know, making those forms, making, keeping up with a newsletter, if you want to do that. Like, so, and normally a PA already has like, I guess, knowledge in a way of what to do or, and can help you as well. They've already made a few connections and things of that nature. Along with that, it's really taking it one step at a time. Don't feel like you have to do everything at once. Like I only recently started having a newsletter. I mean, I think I have one, but I didn't execute it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know, especially when you first get started, you see people that have this and that and that and this, and there's just so many things. You're like, oh, I must have all that. You don't. You're still an author. Like, you've still done the thing.
And probably the authors you're seeing had probably been in the game for a little while. You know, like the ones that you're seeing had, like, they didn't have it all at right at beginning either.
No, and that's what I was fixing to say too. Find some author friends you can ask questions. Like that, such a big thing. Like find somebody else who's either going through it with you or has already been through it, something like that. Like find you someone that can also help, like y'all can ping pong ideas off each other. That's a big thank you. And don't be scared to reach out to people too. That was always my thing. I always felt real nervous to like say hi to someone, you know? And it's like most of us are still human, you know? Like we're just people. Like
anybody that reaches out to me for advice, again, like any reader that DMs me, I'm like, who, me? Any author who like comes in and they're like asking questions, again, I'm like, me? You want my?
I know. I absolutely love when someone asks me something. And I'm like, I have no idea. Like, I'll have somebody else for you because I have no idea, you know? And that's how it works, though. I mean, I think we're all just trying to figure it out. I mean, and what works for one is not going to work for someone else. Like, and it's so interesting to see that, too, just to, you know, as someone coming into this and just being completely overwhelmed, because I was completely overwhelmed. Like, and so I think that really, I mean, as far as just coming into it and all, just focus on what you can right then. You know, you don't have to do all this. It's a come in time. Like, focus. Main focus should always be getting it out. Get the book out first. That is your main focus. Everything else is extras and nice. Other than that, get the book out.
Yeah, I love that. And then I have to tell myself this all the time, and this might be a neurodivergent thing. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, things happen by little steps over a long period of time. We're not doing the 100-meter dash.
Right. And I think that actually, if I had to like pinpoint a reason why people don't continue, a lot of it is because I almost did it to myself. I jumped in. I was doing this. I was doing that. And then you just get burned out. I mean, and it's hard to come back when you have kind of like gotten such a bad taste in your mouth. You know, from doing so much of the other stuff that it's like you just have to take the little steps. And if you don't know something or you don't have something, like, I don't know, merch. that's okay. You know, like you don't have to have that stuff. Like I say, you're still an author. You still did the thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, always be proud of yourself for those little steps too. That's important. Those little things that you do accomplish. It's like, good job. Good job.
Perfect. I think that is an excellent place to wrap up for today. I think there's so much gold in this episode where new authors can really learn. And the hack really, I think, is about mindset, you know, like taking in the process, giving yourself a chance to learn, reevaluating over the time because what used to work anymore. There's just so much good stuff here that you gave us today. So before we go, Deanna, can you please tell us, is there any new releases we should be watching out for? Any new exciting projects or anything?
I do. I actually, and I thought earlier today too, The Hellbound Hearts. They're in a novella series, which is a dark paranormal novella series about witches and Dukes of Hell. Super fun times. But that whole series is going to be finished October 1st. I'm releasing the very last one, which is A Witch's Reign. And even to back check that in July 23rd. I'll always say the wrong date because I get it confused with Papa's birthday. July 23rd is the second one that's coming out. And so, yeah, that right now is, I think, my main focus. Because these little books are so fun. They're just good little palate cleansers. Like, this was such a passion project for me that I'm so excited to see these, like, coming out. So.
I love that. Okay, excellent. And then where can we find you around? Like, social media, website?
Yeah. I am, let's see, on Instagram, I'm Wild Hill Reads. Still, I don't have an author name. For so long. It's been a commitment, you know? On TikTok, I am off Hill. And then I think, let's see, of course, all my books are on Amazon. A couple of them, I think, are on Barnes & Noble now. Me and Ingram fight often. It's fine. That's why they're not all. And then I think everywhere. I do have a website, which is wildhillreads.card.co, which is fun. And that's really nice because it just has all my links to everything else, like everything. Oh, and I have a recently moved Facebook group.
I love that.
Yeah, and it's just Deanna Hill Readers, I think.
Excellent. And we will link all of those in the show notes. So if you are looking for Deanna, if you're looking for her book, if you want to slide into her DMs during her business hours, during her office hours.
Yeah, just don't be mad if I don't answer right away. That's always the biggest fear, you know.
Respect the boundaries. You can find that in the show notes. And with that, I'm going to say thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.